Shabbos Daf Sadi Tes. We are starting on the top of Sadi Tes, Amud Aleph. Gemara is continuing its discussion from yesterday. The Gemara yesterday introduced us to the Krashei HaMishkan, the beams that make up the Mishkan. 48 beams in total that make up the perimeter of the Mishkan. It is a U-shape, as we discussed in great detail yesterday. 8 beams along the western side. And then the remaining beams are on the northern side and on the southern side, and in total make up the Mishkan. We discussed all this in great detail yesterday. The truth of the matter is that the reason why this came up in yesterday's daf here in Shabbos is because the way that the beams were loaded up on to the Agalim, onto the four wagons, has impact in terms of the definition of a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. We're going to be discussing more of that in the course of today's daf. And so as long as we were discussing the Agalim and the way that the crushing were set up on the Agalim, the Gemara used the opportunity to discuss the beams in greater detail. And then on the Amud Beis of yesterday's daf, as long as we discussed the beams, so we also discussed the coverings that go over the Mishkan as well. Two layers of covering that the Gemara discussed yesterday. The first layer, the bottom layer, which is called the Mishkan covering. So that was made up of the various wools and linen. The covering above that, that was the covering that was made up of goat hair. So that is called the Ohel covering. So the Gemara discussed that in terms of how it drapes over the Mishkan. And obviously the way that the Mishkan and the Krashei HaMishkan were set up is going to impact exactly how the coverings lay over the Mishkan. All this was discussed extensively over the course of yesterday's daf. Gemara is going to continue its discussion now as we start on the top of Sadi Tesam at Alftan Rabbanon. Gemara here starts off with the Raisa Yerios HaTachtonu Shal Tcheles V'Shal Argaman V'Shal Tolas Shani. As far as the lower covering is concerned, it's made up of various wools. Wools that are dyed blue and purple and red, and also made up of linen as well. The Elyonos, the covering that goes above it, the Ohel covering, Shamaisa Izim. It's made up of goat hair. Ugedola Chachma Shenemra Be'Elyonos Yoser Mimashin Emru Betachtonos. There was a greater wisdom that was required in terms of the construction of the upper covering than that of the lower covering. As far as the lower covering is concerned, the pasuk says, "V'chol isha chachma slev biyada tavu." Any woman who had chachma slev, any woman had wisdom. So obviously, there was a baseline wisdom that was required in terms of the construction of the lower covering. V'ila b'elyonos, but as far as the upper covering is concerned, the ksiv, the pasuk says, "V'chol anashim asher nasaliban osana v'chachma tavu asizim." The woman who had Chachma, but if you look carefully at the pasuk, Nasaliban, they had certain inspiration. The hearts were elevated. And the Gemara's understanding over here is that there was extra wisdom that was required in terms of the construction of the upper covering. Tanya Mishum Rabbi Nechemiah Shatuf B'Yizim V'Tavuim in Yizim. The Brayso over here says that when the goat hair was cleaned, it was clean while still connected to the goat, V'Tavuim, when it was spun, also it was still connected to the goat. And perhaps the Gemara is comparing, putting aside these two statements, putting side by side these two statements, this perhaps is a reflection of the extra chachma that's needed in terms of the construction of the goat hair. Shtei gezuz shtaros, now we are going to go back and we're going to review what we learned yesterday, and the Gemara is going to have a couple of follow-up questions. Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chia. Rav quotes in the name of his uncle, Rabbi Chia, Agalos tachtem uvenem v'tzideim rishos harabim, that when it comes to the wagons, so if you are underneath the wagons, and as we pointed out yesterday, the wagons are constructed of a frame. The Gemara for a moment yesterday, as we turn from the Amud Beis to from the Amud Aleph to Amud Beis of yesterday's daf, the Gemara for a moment thought there was some sort of baseboard, but the Gemara concluded that the wagons are just simply a frame. So if you were underneath, and as we concluded in yesterday's daf, and you're not directly underneath the beam, so that is what's called tachtehem, and that defines itself as a Rishus Rabin. Veinehem, between the wagons. And as we discussed yesterday, and just to briefly recap, so we saw the wagons that were basically traveling side by side. There were four wagons in total, each traveling a pair at a time. And now as the wagons were traveling side by side, and when the wagons were loaded with the crushing with the beams went across 10 amos, centered on the wagon. The long side of the beam went against the wide side of the wagon. So now, if I were to look at the beams as they were going on the wagon side by side, so you would see that the beams in total are 20 amas across. Beinehem over here seems to mean between the beams. So in other words, if I was traveling between the wagons, specifically between the beams of the wagons, sidehem, the sides of the wagons. Again, as we go back to yesterday's daf and we review, yesterday's daf we noted that the wagons in total were 5 amas long and 2.5 amas wide. However, there was another amma and a quarter that went out on each side of the wagons that made up the axle and the wheels. So in total, the wagons were 5 by 5 amos, but the actual wagons themselves were 5 amas long and 2.5 amas wide. So if I am tzidehem by the sides of the wagon, that means to say I'm somewhere within the wheel area, meaning I'm between the two wheels on either side. So once again, that is going to define itself as a reshus rabban. So we saw the statement of Rabban yesterday's daf, and we're reviewing it again today. As we're going to see, the Gemara is going to progress with this discussion. As we go back over yesterday's daf, we just remind each other that the only time that you're in a reshus rabban is if you're not under the actual beams, because once you're under the actual beams, you're in a roofed area. And the entire point of yesterday's daf was to teach us that if you are in a roofed area, that does not define itself as a reshus rabban. So over here, the area is underneath the wagon and between the two wagons and on the sides of the wagon by the wheels. So it is a reshus rabban, provided that you're not under the actual beams. Amar Abai ben Agala Agala Kamale Orech Agala. The distance between the two wagons was the length of a wagon. V'kama Orech Agala Hiamas. And as far as the length of the wagon is concerned, it was 5 amas in total, as we went over already. But the Gemara over here is reviewing, because the Gemara is really setting us up for a question. Why should the length of the wagon be 5 amas long? Lamali Bedala Pagasagi. It should really be okay, sufficient, if it was 4.5 amas. Now, we went over this extensively yesterday in terms of how exactly the beams are going to be laid on top of the wagons. On each one of the wagons, there are going to be a total of 12 beams. And as we pointed out, the beams could be laid down either on its side that's 1 amma wide, or it could be laid down on this side that's 1.5 ammas wide. Either way, the maximum amount of wagon space you're going to need is either going to be, well, let's say the maximum is going to be 4.5 ammas. So the Gemara wants to know, why does a wagon need to be a total of 5 amas when 4.5 would be sufficient? So the Gemara's answer, ki hechad delo lidchuku krushim. If the wagon was only a total of 4.5 amas, so what's going to happen now is that the beams are going to be really compacted into a small space, and there's not going to be any kind of room for the beams to, so to say, maneuver, and it'll just simply be too compressed an area for all of those beams. Amar Rav Tzidei Agala Kamala Rachav Agala. As far as the sides of the wagons are concerned, so they are the same as the Rachav Agala, as the width of the Agala. Now, as we already went over, the section of the wheels that jutted out on the sides of the wagon, so on each side of each wagon, the wheels went out 1.25 ammas. So that means to say that when you have a wagon, and obviously they have wheels on both sides of the wagon, so that would be a total of 2.5, which is going to be equivalent to the width of the wagon. And the Gemara now is going to say, V'kama rachav agala she'amos emechsa. The width of the wagon is 2.5 ammas. Lamali, v'amta opagasagi. Now the Gemara says, now the width of the wagon doesn't have to be 2.5 ammas. It could be 1.5 ammas. Now at this point in time, what the Gemara is thinking is that, look, anyway, there is going to be part of the keresh that is jutting out on either side of the wagon. The keresh in total is 10 amas. When laying the length against the width of the wagon, so even as a wagon being as wide as 2.5 ammas, obviously there's going to be tremendous excess going out on either side of the wagon. So as long as we're accounting for excess anyway, so why not just simply make the wagon, the Gemara over here suggesting 1.5 ammas, and there'll just simply be more of the beam that is jutting out on both sides of the wagon. So the Gemara gives the answer, which we probably would have guessed, ki hechad delo lididu krashim. So the Gemara says, well, the concern over here is that if we're balancing the wagon on such a small base area of 1.5, what's going to happen is that the beams themselves are going to teeter and they're going to fall. So to create a base of 2.5 ammas is about enough space necessary in order to give support to the beams, so that under normal circumstances the beams will not teeter and fall off. The Gemara now has concluded almost its discussion regarding the beams and the wagons. The Gemara just has one more question it follows up with. So the Gemara says, we know, we have a tradition that the Rishus HaRabim is going to be a total of 16 amas wide. meaning part of the very definition of the Rishus HaRabim. Now, we discussed this back in the first parak of the Masechta, where the Gemara there discussed some of the parameters of the Rishus HaRabim. Here, the Gemara is just going over one of the aspects of Rishus HaRabim, and that is that it has to have a minimum of 16 amas width in terms of the road that is going through the town. Now, the Gemara says this number of 16 amas, where is it coming from? The Gemara is assuming, as it has been throughout this entire parak, that in order for anything to define itself as a malacha, in this case, hotzah, in this case, the parameters of hotzah, and specifically that of Rishus HaRabim, so it has to be modeled after something that was in the Mishkan. And the Gemara now is assuming that the number is a product of the wagons as the wagons were moving through the desert. Now, let's picture the scene as we described both yesterday and today. We have two wagons that are riding side by side. We have the crushim on the wagons. And now, if we could just look at the exterior of the wagon that is on one side and the exterior of the wagon that is on the other side, and we were to tape measure the distance between the exterior of the two wagons, it would be a total of 15 amas. Now, perhaps you're thinking it really should be a total of 20 amas. Now, that's true, but that's not the wagons. The 20 amas is going from one end of the beam to the other end of the other beam that is going side by side. But the Gemara at this point in time is only considering the wagons and not the beams that are jutting out on the exterior of both sides. And Rashi over here notes, why is the Gemara ignoring the beams that are jutting out? Because over here we're talking about a Rishus HaRabim. And Rashi reminds us that the rule that we've gone over again and again, that the Rishus HaRabim starts at the ground and only goes up a total of 10 tefachim. We know that the wagons themselves, by the time the beams were set on the top of the frame of the wagons, that already was higher than 10 tefachim. So that means to say that the wagons themselves are part and parcel of the Rishus HaRabim, but the beams that are above it are not part and parcel of the Rishus HaRabim. In fact, they are above the Rishus HaRabim. So that means to say now that as we're looking at these wagons going side by side, and again, you take your measure, your tape measure, and you're measuring from the exterior of one wagon and the exterior of the wagon that is right alongside it. So you're going to be a total of 15 amas. 5 amas for the width of each of the wagons. Remember, the wagon's actual width is 2.5. But when you add the wheels, the axles and the wheels, so it's going to be a total of 5 amas going across. The other one is also 5 amas going across. We know that there's 5 amas space between the two. With all that stated, what comes out now is that the wagons from end to end is a total of 15 amas. The Gemara says, if that's true, we are just one amma short of the tradition. The tradition is that the Rishus HaRabim has to be 16 amas. And the Gemara now is about to ask this question. Anan de Garmin Alami Mishkan, we learn from the Mishkan, the Mishkan Chamesra Havai, it's really 15. Amsi Yaseira Havai, Davakai Ben Levi, Dechimishtafe Krashim Havanakat Lahu. So the Gemara's response is that we worked with an assumption that the Gemara is going to be changing just slightly. And that is that the beams were not actually right next to one another, were not in perfect proximity to one another. The beams were spaced out just a little bit. So that means to say that that center area between the two wagons, between where the beams are, so is actually a one amma cushion set between these two beams, so that in fact there was in total 16 ammas from the exterior of one wagon to the exterior of the other wagon. And the Gemara here goes on to explain, why was there an extra amma that was situated between the two beams, so that in the event that there was any teetering of the beams, now we did, as we already explained, have the width of each of the wagons be 2.5 ammas, but still, you are balancing a 10 amma beam on a 2.5 amma base of the wagon, so there's a possibility for teetering to happen. And so what we're going to do is that we're going to have Levim who are walking alongside the wagons to make sure that if in the event that the beams start teetering, so they're going to be there, prepared and ready to go ahead and make sure that the beams do not fall down. And the Gemara points out that a small space is going to be created between the area of the two beams. In fact, that's going to be one amma, so that you can have a Ben Levi there right between the two, so that if necessary, he's going to be there to balance the beams in the event that there's any kind of teetering of the beams. So with all that stated, now we understand that the total distance between the exterior of one wagon and the exterior of the other wagon is 16 amas, and that, of course, is going to now set the precedent for a Rishus HaRabim. We are now picking it up on the Mishnah on the bottom of the Sadi Testament Aleph and more on the topic of Hotza'ah. Chuya Sabor, where the Gemara here is talking about a dish right next to a pit. And the picture over here is that you're digging up the pit, the bore. And the dirt you're putting along right outside of the pit, on the edge of the pit. And so this chulya, this ridge that you have right along the pit, could in fact be a Rishos HaRabim. How is it going to be Rishos HaRabim? The Mishnah is about to teach us. As long as it has the dimensions of, Rishos HaRabim, I meant Rishos HaYachid. How is it going to have the dimensions of a Rishos HaYachid? As long as it has the dimensions of Rishos HaYachid, which is going to be 10 tefachim high, and an area of 4x4 tefachim. And Sela, the Mishnah also gives another example of a stone, where the stone also could be a Rishos HaYachid, as provided that it has the dimensions of Rishos HaYachid. V'asel shein gvon asara, as long as it's 10 tefachim high, v'rachvan arba, and it's going to be an area of 4x4 tefachim, hanoto mehem v'anosin agaman chayev. If I take from them, and that means to say I take from them and then transfer to Rishos HaRabim, or nosin al gabam, and I put it on them, meaning I transfer from Rishos HaRabim to the top of either the chulya or the even, chayev. One would be chayev, pachos mikan pater, but if it'd be less than that, it'd be pater, because then it would not be Rishos HaYachid, and then you're just simply failing on transferring from a Rishos HaRabim to Rishos HaYachid, or conversely, from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim. The Mishnah over here gives us an example of a natural entity, but as long as it has the proper dimensions, it could define itself as a Rishos HaYachid, provided, of course, that it just simply have the minimum dimensions of 10 tefachim high and an area of 4x4. And then it would be a Rishos HaYachid, and then transferring from it or to it would be a violation of Otsah. The Gemara starts off the discussion, Lama Lemisne Chulyas Habor V'Hasela, Lisne Habor V'Hasela. The Gemara over here says, what do we gain in the Mishnah by giving two examples where one is that it is a ridge right next to a ditch and a stone. When all said and done, the Mishnah seems to be making the same point and repeating it twice. Meaning basically what we have is a natural structure that has the dimensions of a Rishos HaYachid and is going to be Rishos HaYachid. But why give me two examples of basically the same thing? In fact, the Gemara suggests if the Mishnah wants to teach me something, why doesn't the Mishnah teach me the case of bor v'sela, a pit and a stone? The pit now is recessed in the ground, and then the Mishnah could be teaching me that as long as it's 10 tefachim deep and 4x4, it's considered Rishos HaYachid. Sela will tell me that if it is 10 tefachim high and 4x4, it's Rishos HaYachid. That is two separate points. But over here, by the Mishnah telling me chulya sabor, which means that we're talking about the dirt that was excavated from the pit and put alongside, and as long as that has the dimensions, it's going to be a Rishos HaYachid, that effectively is telling me the same thing regarding the stone. And so the Mishnah is giving me two examples, but does not seem like we're learning anything new from the second example that's given in the Mishnah. The Gemara answers. The Gemara says, Misayela le Rav Yochanan, support for Rav Yochanan, Dam Rav Yochanan, Bor v'chuyasum, mitzarfin la'asara. So Rav Yochanan says that it is in fact teaching me a chiddush in the Mishnah, and that is that let's say I have the bor and the chulya. I'm excavating a pit. And now the amount I excavated from the ground is not a total of 10 tefachim. In fact, let's say for purposes of illustration, that I only dug it 5 tefachim deep. And then the dirt I put right alongside the pit. So I put around the exterior of the pit, so now the chulya, the dirt now, is creating a ridge around the pit that's 5 tefachim high. And now what we're learning together is that if I take the depth of 5 tefachim and I add it to the ridge of 5 tefachim, that will make a totality of 10 tefachim, and now we have created a Rishos HaYachid. And the idea that the Mishnah is introducing us to is the idea of tziruf, meaning that we now can take both the height and the depth, combine the two, and use it in order to get to our dimensions of a Rishos HaYachid. 10 tefachim, combined from both the height and the depth, in order to get to the definition of Rishos HaYachid. Tanya Mehacha, the Gemara is going to quote a brisa that is going to be making the same exact point, board Rishos HaRabim. If I have a pit in the Rishos HaRabim, Mamoka Yud V'Rachva Arba'a, if let's say it's 10 tefachim deep and it's an area 4x4, Ein Memalan Himena B'Shabbos, you cannot draw water from it on Shabbos. Drawing water from it from Shabbos, one, will certainly be in a position where you are drawing from a Rishos HaYachid, and then all you would need to do simply is to move it over into a Rishos HaRabim, and one is violating the Isser of Hotzah. As we turn now to the Amud Beis, Ela Im Kein Asula Mechitza Gavol Yud Tfachim. unless you made around this pit a separate perimeter that is 10 tefachim high. So if you made a separate perimeter around the area of the pit, so now what you've created is an area of a Rishus HaYachid. And now the pit is encased in a Rishus HaYachid, and now there would be no problem from drawing water from the pit and bringing it to the Rishus HaYachid. We'll add also provided that it's owned by a single owner. But if, assuming that it is owned by the same person, then there would be no problem whatsoever to transfer from the area of the pit into the Rishus HaYachid that the pit is circumscribed within. However, continues the Braisa, Ein Shosim Hemana B'Shabbos. One is not allowed to drink from this pit on Shabbos. Rashi over here quotes the Gemara in Erevin. The Gemara in Erevin is going to be discussing this in more detail. But the simple idea of the Gemara over here is as follows. One could perhaps make the argument to himself, look, the pit is the Rishus HaYachid, and right now I'm in the Rishus HaRabim, but I'm not going to transfer from the pit into the Rishus HaRabim. All I really want to do is drink. So what I'll do is I'll just go over, I'll move myself right next to the pit. I'll put my mouth over the pit, and I'll drink directly from the pit. And there should be no problem whatsoever. The Chachamim were concerned that if a person were to engage in this kind of behavior, eventually what's going to happen is that he's going to pick up his head, and he's going to be transferring from the area of the pit, the Rishus HaYachid, into the Rishus HaRabim that he's standing in. So what the Mishnah is telling us is that one is not allowed to stand on Shabbos right next to the pit, proximate to the pit, and put his head over the pit in order to drink the water. Aleim ke nechnesla, rosho v'rubo. Unless he puts both his head and the majority of his body into the area of the pit. The Chachamim were only concerned if it's just your head that's over the pit, because eventually what's going to happen is that your head is going to follow the rest of your body. However, if your head and the majority of your body are over the area of the pit, so at that point in time, the Chachamim were no longer concerned that you were going to retract and transfer the water from the area of the Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, and then, under those circumstances, even midrabanan, you would be totally okay to drink, to take a drink from that pit. And finally, the Braisa concludes, and this is the reason why we're quoting the Braisa over here in our Gemara. Ubor b'chliyasa mitzarfen la'asara. Both the pit and the ridge that's around it will combine in order to make the ten tefachim so that it could define itself as a Rishus HaYachid. Exactly the point that Rav Yochanan taught us on the Amud Aleph, which is the Chiddush in our Mishnah, and here it's corroborated by the Braisa. The Gemara continues, now we're on Zaytetes Amud Beis, four lines from the top, Ba'aninei Rav Mordechai Mei Rava. Following question was asked, Amud Rishus HaRabim Gavol Yud V'Rachav Dalet. Let's say you had a pillar in the Rishus HaRabim that was 10 tefachim high, and it was 4x4 wide, meaning to say it's a Rishus HaYachid. V'Zarek Benach Al Gabav. And what you did is that you threw an item from the Rishus HaRabim onto the top of this pillar. Mahu, what would be the halacha? And in order to appreciate and understand the Gemara's question over here, let's go over just a little bit of background information. Most of it we already know, but let's just review so that we appreciate and understand what the Gemara is asking over here. We've said many times before that when it comes to Rishus HaRabim area, the Rishus HaRabim area has a halachic ceiling. It only goes up 10 tefachim. Above 10 tefachim, it no longer defines itself as a Rishus HaRabim, but rather it's a makom patur, an area that is in halacha not considered a domain. Now, we already discussed before that if you are walking in a Rishus HaRabim and you're carrying an item while walking through the Rishus HaRabim, even though the item you're carrying is above 10 tefachim, nevertheless, halachically, it's viewed that that item is in the Rishus HaRabim, but that, of course, is because you're walking with the item and you're obviously walking in the Rishus HaRabim. So the halacha views that the item itself is also considered in the Rishus HaRabim. However, if you were to throw something in a Rishus HaRabim, but I don't mean in, I really mean over the Rishus HaRabim, and it went above 10 tefachim from the ground, so the item now is no longer considered in the domain of the Rishus HaRabim, but rather now it's considered in the makom patur. Another piece of information that we need to know in order to appreciate the Gemara's question is the idea that a Rishus HaYachid ola l'rakia. And that means to say that when I have an area that defines itself as a Rishus HaYachid, so even if it has a roof overhead halachically, the Rishus HaYachid status continues and goes up ad infinitum. The Rishus HaYachid status just continues to ascend, and there is no limit to where the Rishus HaYachid is going to go. It's ad l'shamayim. It just simply continues to go up and up. And so now, once we are looking at this scenario and we're looking at it with halachic glasses, So basically, whenever I am throwing an item from a Rishus Rabbim onto the top of a pillar, so what's going to happen is that it's going to be traveling through a Makom Pater, because once it leaves my hand, and the assumption is that my hand is not directly over the pillar, once it leaves my hand, it is now traveling through a Makom Pater. And when it lands on top of the pillar, it's landing on the Rishus Yachid. The item now was picked up in the Rishus Rabbim, thrown through a Makom Pater, and lands on top of the pillar, which is a Rishus Yachid. And so what we have over here now is a scenario in which it went from the Akira took place in the Rishus Rabbim, the Hanacha took place in the Rishus Yachid, but sometime in the interim, it went through a Makom Pater. And the question now is whether or not the Makom Pater is going to break it up. Now, in a moment, we're going to respond to this question, but before we do so, Tosfos reminds us that this is not the first time in the Masechta that the Gemara asked a question that was that sounds like the Gemara we just learned together. In fact, Tosfos points out, you can go all the way back to Daf Vav in our Masechta, and the Gemara over there asked a question which is unbelievably similar to ours, and the Gemara didn't even ask a question. The Gemara there and back on Daf Vav says, Hamotzi, and Tosfos quotes it over here, Hamotzi mechanos l'platya derech stav chayev. That if one were to carry from a chanos, which is a Rishus Yachid, to a platya, which is a Rishus Rabbin, and there's a derech stav, which we identified as a Carmelis, so one would be chayev. Because as long as you didn't stop in the Carmelis, so then we just look at the starting point, the end point. Starting point was the Rishus Yachid, end point was the Rishus Rabbin. The fact that in the interim it traveled through a Carmelis is not going to have any halachic bearing. And so Tosfos is bothered by the obvious question where, if the Gemara already established this earlier in the Masechta, so why is the Gemara asking the question over here as if to say we're breaking new ground? And why didn't the Gemara quote this Gemara or that we saw earlier in terms of making any kind of precedent for our discussion? So this is a difficult question, and Tosfos over here gives an answer. And you can see Tosfos for an answer over here. Just to quickly summarize Tosfos's answer right here on our daf, there are other answers to this question as well, but Tosfos over here makes a suggestion that perhaps the Gemara over here was entertaining the question as opposed to early in the Masechta, where the Gemara didn't think that there wasn't even a question to ask, is because perhaps over here we're discussing a scenario where I threw the item upwards, and then what happens is it started making its descent, and it went into the Rishus HaYachid only after it made its descent. And Tosfos feels that this may be a little bit different than what we discussed earlier, because while the item is making its descent, so it no longer is a function of your koach. Your koach is what threw it up, but when it comes down again, that's koach kocho. That's only a derivative of your koach, and perhaps it's not directly associated with you, and so perhaps, since it is going downward, so maybe the makom pater in which it is no longer your koach can somehow be detached from you, disassociated from you, and perhaps, what Tosfos is suggesting, that's why the Gemara over here is entertaining the idea that this case may be different than that in the beginning of the Masechta. See Tosfos over here for more of that discussion. In the meantime, however, we're going to go back to the Gemara, as the Gemara now is going to be addressing this very question. The first the Gemara articulates the question, Mahu. Mi amrin and harei akira b'isar, harei anacha b'isar. On one hand, we could say, simply look over here at both the origination and the destination. It originated in a Rishus Yachid. No, I'm sorry. In this case, it originated in a Rishus Rabbin. And its destination was in a Rishus Yachid, on the very top of the pillar. And can we just simply not look at those two points and be done with it? Odimah came into Mimakam Pater Ka'asya Lo. Or maybe over here we have to also look at the journey. And the journey took it through a Makom Pater, and perhaps that's going to break it up. And therefore the person's not going to be Chayiv. Amalei Masnisan Hi. So remember that this question was asked from Rabbo, and Rabbo's response was, it's a Mishnah. Now, which Mishnah? We'll see in just a moment. Also, Shaila to Rav Yosef. He asked the same question to Rav Yosef, Amalei Masnisan Hi. Rav Yosef says it's a Mishnah. Also, Shaila to Abaye, Amalei Masnisan Hi. And Abaye also said that it is a Mishnah. So as he's going around asking this question to various Amoraim, each one of them gave the same answer, and that is, it's a Mishnah. Now, first his response, Rav Yosef. I'm sorry. Rav Mordechai. Amar lehu, he said, Kuchu beroka da'adati tafisu. You're all spitting with the same spit. I'm getting the same answer from everybody, which could just simply be an indication that they're all giving the right answer. But nevertheless, Amar leva alo tizbro, he says, now wait one second. Why don't you take a look at the same Mishnah that we're going to look at, And why can't you conclude the same way we are? The Hatanan, we're going to look at our Mishnah. We're talking about putting an item on a stone. Either you're taking it off the stone or you're putting it on the stone, but that is considered a transfer. And so why isn't that going to be a good proof? Because in order to get to the stone, it has to, the stone, remember, is 10 tvachim above the ground. 10 tvachim above the ground, as we already established, is Rishus Yachid. It is an area of Makam Dalal Dalal. It's Rishus Yachid. Now, in order to get to the top of the stone, obviously it's a solid piece, and the only way to get to the top of the stone is to take the item above the Rishus Rabin, have it travel through the airspace above the Rishus Rabin, which is a Makam Patur, and then and only then is it going to get to the top of the stone. So here we are now, basically replicating the question. You take an item from a Rishus Rabin, going through the airspace above 10 Tfachim, which is a Makam Patur, getting to the top of the stone, so that's exactly what we're asking. And the Mishnah says very flatly and very clearly that that is the Malacha Avotzah. Amar Lehi, Reb Mordechai's response is Dilma Masisim B'macha. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the Mishnah is talking about where you were transferring a really, really small item, let's say, for example, a needle. So the Gemara says, who cares how small the item is? Macha Nami, EF Shadalo Midle Porta. So the Gemara says, even the needle, again, in order for the needle to get to the top of the stone, the needle by definition is going to have to go above 10 Tfachim to get to the top of the stone, which by definition means it has to go through a Makam Patur. And the Gemara says, what did we gain by saying that the item is very small? Still, ultimately, it is going to be going Rishus Rabim, Makam Patur, to the top of the stone, Rishus Yachid. So the Gemara gives a couple of suggestions. The Islay Morsa, the Gemara says that perhaps what we're dealing with over here is that there is a little bit of a ridge. And Rashi over here, take a look at Rashi right along where we were on the Gemara, just a line above. Now, this ridge that we're describing over here is just a little bit lower than 10. And so what you can have over here is that we can have our needle hitting this ridge that is just below 10 tfachim, and therefore the needle never has to go through a makam patur. The cave, and I'm reading the Rashi inside, the cave in the kulik vo yud barmi ahi morsa v'ilo ha've makam chashuv ha've leichuri v'shus ha'yachid. And Rashi over here introduces us to a rule which we're going to see together in the Gemara. And that is the following. That even though this small little ridge of the stone is lower than 10 tfachim, it's still part and parcel of the Rishus HaYachid. Rashi over here cites a Gemara that we're going to be seeing together, and the Gemara teaches us that if I have Chorei Rishus HaYachid, meaning that if the majority of the surface area is a Rishus HaYachid, and you have a little nook, a little cranny, some sort of crevice, a crack, as long as it is not in of itself a significant area, so that is going to be defined as part and parcel of the Rishus HaYachid. So the first answer of the Gemara is that what I did is I took the needle and I inserted it into this ridge that just went a shade below the 10th Tfachim area, but it's still transferring to Rishus HaYachid because of the principle of Chor Rishus HaYachid. That's one possibility. The Gemara's second possibility, which is rather similar, Inami Deramia Becharitza, or it is that I put it in a crack in the stone. And through by doing so, I basically was able to snake it through the crack in order to get it to the top of the stone. This is similar to the previous answer. It's just over here, we're not employing the rule of Chori Rishus HaYachid. We're just simply saying that there was a way in this particular case to get the needle from the Rishus HaRabim through this little crack in the stone, then bring it up over the stone and have it situated and sitting on top of the stone. What we gained in this answer is that we just simply did not have to bypass the Makam Patur at all. Either way, these are two akimtas, these are two circumstances that the Gemara gave in the Mishnah. Now, granted, of course, that these both of them are going to be a dochik. They're both forced answers that are given to the Mishnah, but as long as these are possible ways of explaining the Mishnah, the only point the Gemara is making is that we do not have absolute proof that our Mishnah is going to be a flat raya to our question. Nevertheless, it seems like the Gemara finishes its discussion at this point in time. That part's clear. But it seems like the Gemara is more or less happy with the proof that came from our Mishnah, and that if a person were to transfer, in this case, throw an item from A, Rishus HaRabim, to Rishus HaYachin, even though in the interim it goes through a Makom Pater, we're going to be looking at the start point, we're going to be looking at the end point, and since they are both going to be Makom Chiyuv, so ultimately it creates a Chiyuv and the person would be in violation of Otsa. Now we continue in the Gemara, Amar Rav Meisha Bai Rav Yochan, Rav Yochan asks the following question, Kosub Rishus HaRabim, Gavo Yud, Ve'in Arachav Arba. Let's say I have a wall. The wall itself is in a Rishus HaRabim, meaning it abuts a Rishus HaRabim. It's 10 tefachim high. Now the wall itself is not 4x4. So that means to say that the wall in of itself is not a Rishus HaYachid. Now, Umukav Lakamras, V'Osel Rishus HaYachid. Now this wall, in conjunction with a couple of other walls, ends up creating a perimeter and thereby turning a karmelis area into a Rishus HaYachid. In a moment, we'll explain why the Gemara gives this example of converting a karmelis area into Rishus HaYachid. But basically now we're using this wall in conjunction with other walls in order to create a perimeter so that the interior of that perimeter is Rishus HaYachid. And now Rabbi Yochanan's question becomes the following. V'zarek v'nach al gabav. Now what happens is that you're throwing it to the top of the wall. Now we already pointed out that the wall in of itself is not does not have the dimensions of Rishus HaYachid. It's just simply serving as the wall for an area that's circumscribed within it that is a Rishus HaYachid. And now the question becomes, does the wall itself also take on the status of the Rishus HaYachid? And so, Mahu, Mi Arminan came into Ein Rachav Dal Makom Paterhu. On one hand, we could just simply look at the dimensions of the wall and say to ourselves that since the dimensions of the wall is not an area of Dala by Dala, so therefore it is not a Rishus HaYachid, but rather a Makom Pater. Odilma came into Asar Rishus HaYachid, Kaman Damali Damya. On the other hand, since this wall is being used to create a Rishus HaYachid, so therefore what we could say is that the wall itself also obtains the status of Rishus HaYachid. Amar Ula, Ula to this question answers using a Kavachomer. Look, if this wall is creating an area of a Rishus HaYachid, so then it goes without saying that the wall itself also is going to define as a Rishus HaYachid. This Kavachomer of the Gemara is invoking the idea, if something is creating a status, so then for sure it itself is going to be obtaining the same status. It Marnam, the Gemara quotes as well, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi, Amarav, Bechein Amarav Yitzhak, Amarav Yochanan, Kosov, Rishos HaRabim, Gavoa Yud, Vein Arachav Arba, Umukav Lekarmelis, Vasov, Rishos HaYachin, Hazork, Venach HaGabav, Chayev LaAcherim, Osem Mechitz, LaAtzmo, LaKol Shekein. And the Gemara basically repeats the same thing, but over here, in the name of Rabbi Yitzhak and the name of Rabbi Yochanan, but it's the same basic idea that if the wall is creating a Rishos HaYachin, then it goes without saying that since the wall is creating Rishos HaYachin, it for sure, it itself, is going to obtain the status of a Rishos HaYachin. Just to go back for a moment, with the example that the Gemara gave was super specific in that what this wall did, this wall abutted a Rishus HaRabim, and the wall, what it did is, it took a karmelis area, which must have been on the other side of the wall, and took the karmelis area and converted it into a Rishus HaYachid area. That case of the Gemara is really specific, and why is the Gemara over here giving such a specific scenario? So Tosus over here asked that question. And just to say over the Tosus outside, Tosus says that the Gemara is asking this question because if you think about it, changing something from a karmelis to Rishus HaYachid, although is a change, but it's not a radical change. Meaning if we had an area that, let's say, for example, started off as being a Rishus HaRabim, and then we built four walls around it and created that area, changed that area from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid, that is a significant change. The Kavachomer the Gemara employed. Well, if it can make this a status of Rishus HaYachid, so then for sure the walls themselves should be Rishus HaYachid. So there, the status is, the walls are affecting a tremendous change, changing something from a Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. But over here in our scenario, where all the walls are doing is turning it from a karmelis to Rishus HaYachid, so admittedly, of course, that is a change, but not as drastic, not as dramatic. And so perhaps over here, the Kavachomer will not be as powerful. And that's exactly the chiddush of the Gemara says Tosfos, that still the Kavachomer is still going to be in effect, in that once we see that these walls affect a change, albeit a smaller change, but once they affect a change, so then the walls are going to also have the status of the Rishus HaYachid itself. Halfway down on Tzadik Tzesam and Beis, we continue in the Gemara, by Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan asked the following question. Bor Tisha Va'akar Mimena Chulia V'Hishlim Ola Asara. Mahu. What we would call a classic question within the Gemara. And that is as follows. The pit is 9 tefachim deep. And what I did is I dug in the pit and I took out one more tefach of dirt. So now what we have done is a number of things. Now, of course, what we've done on top of what the Gemara is discussing is probably the malacha of Choresh. But right now the Gemara is just laser focused on the aspect of Hotzah. And in terms of Hotzah, two things have occurred and seemingly concurrently. One is that we took this pit by digging out that one tefach and turned it from 9 tefachim deep to 10 tefachim deep. So we made the pit into a Rishus Yachid. Simultaneously, what we also did is that we took this dirt out of the pit, and assuming that you then transferred into Rishus Harabim, so now the question becomes as follows. Did I violate the Malach of Hotzah? Because over here, the completion of the pit to make it a Rishus Yachid was done simultaneously while taking the dirt out of the pit. Mahu, and that's Gemara's question. Akiras Chepetz Vasiyas Mechitza Bahadei Adadikase Umechayev. So do we look at these acts as if they occurred concurrently, at which point in time the person would be chayev? Olo mechayev, or maybe no. Maybe we cannot look at them as simultaneous events. Maybe we first have to look at the fact that the dirt was dug out. Then, and only afterwards, do we then view the pit as a Rishus HaYachid. But in other words, that means to say, of course, that then the dirt was not taken out of a Rishus HaYachid at the time while the dirt was removed. So, this is a classic question in the Gemara, and the Gemara only follows it up with Intim Salam. The Gemara now is going to just simply move the question forward a little bit. Now, by moving the question forward a little bit, we're going to start off with an assumption. And that is that in the case under discussion that we just finished discussing, so perhaps over there, since the pit did not start off as being a Rishus HaYachid, so we have to look at it as sequential events and not concurrent events. Meaning the first thing we have to look at is the fact that you dug the dirt out, and then only afterwards does it become a Rishus HaYachid. However, let's now just turn the question around just a little bit. Let's see what happens under the following circumstances. Bor Yud, V'nasan L'socha Chulya. Let's say the pit was 10 tefachim deep. And then what we did is that we put in just a tefach's worth of dirt. Umi ata. And in doing so, you minimize the depth of the pit. So now the pit is only 9 tefachim deep. So here as well, what has now happened is that there was a hanacha, and at the same time of the hanacha, there was also a change of the status of the pit, where the pit was a Rishus HaYachid, but now that its depth is only 9 tefachim, it's no longer Rishus HaYachid. Mahu. And the Gemara here, again, asks the same question. So is the putting down of the item and the status of it losing its status as Rishus HaYachid, is that coming at the same time? And therefore Mechayev, and therefore the person would be Chayev. Oh, lo Mechayev. Or maybe no. Maybe the person would not be Chayev because perhaps what we'll say is that its loss of identity as a Rishus HaYachid occurred first, and then only afterwards the Hanacha occurs. The Gemara says, okay, but at least can we not answer the question based on something else that we learned together? Didn't we learned the Mishnah, and we said over this Mishnah numerous times, and we're going to see this Mishnah in tomorrow's daf. If I throw something and it hits a wall, but it hits it above 10 tefachim, it's like throwing in the air, because again, the Rishus HaRabim only goes up 10 tefachim. And since it landed above 10 tefachim, it did not land in the Rishus HaRabim. If I throw it less than 10 tefachim, it's like throwing it in the ground. And if I throw it 4 amos in the Rishus HaRabim, one would be chayev. And on that Mishnah, the Gemara says, I don't understand halonach. What does it mean that landed on the wall? It's a vertical wall. What does it mean it landed on the wall? I'm Rav Yochanan B'Tvela Shemena Shaninu. Rav Yochanan, in explaining that case, says that we're talking about a sticky date. And what happens is that I threw the sticky date against the wall, and it simply stuck to the wall. Now the Gemara is assuming, as Rashi explains over here, that the distance between you and the wall is exactly 4 amos. Now the Mishnah doesn't say that, but we have to assume that the Mishnah is working with the biggest chiddush that it could possibly say, and so therefore the distance between you and the wall is exactly 4 amos, and now when I'm throwing this sticky date against the wall, the date itself did not traverse a total of 4 amos. In fact, once the date is stuck to the wall, and then you would measure the distance between you and the date, it would be less than 4 amos. And that's exactly the Gemara's question. V'hai ha'kamamayit ma'arba amos. Have I not minimized the length between you and the wall now, where it's now going to be less than 4 amos? Ha'sam lo mevatale, ha'cham mevatale. The Gemara says the cases are not really comparable one to the other. Because over there, in that scenario, you were not mevatal. Meaning, the date does not become part and parcel of the wall. And so therefore, when measuring the distance, we're always going to measure the distance between you and the actual wall itself. And even though the date right now is minimizing that, but at the same time, we would totally understand that the date is going to be removed, and in no way does it really take away from the dimensions in terms of the distance between you and the wall. Masha Inkin, as it relates to over here, when you're putting dirt into the ground, so that dirt is something which plants to stay there, and so what you really are doing is you are in fact minimizing its height, and it could be said that you are in fact diminishing it from the status of Rishus Yachid, reducing the height from 10 tfachim to 9 tfachim, and only then does the hanach occur. So the cases are not comparable, and the Gemara says, so we can't learn out one from the other. Continuing in the Gemara, we are towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're going to be dealing today with one more question. By Rava, Rava asks the following question, Zarek daf anach al gabi yisedos. Let's say you throw a plank, a beam. Now you throw it onto a stick, right? This is almost like being in the circus over here. So you have a stick stuck in the ground, and the stick itself is 10 tefachim high, but it is not 4x4. The stick by itself is not a Rishus HaYachid. And what we've done now is that we've taken some sort of beam, some sort of plank, and that is a minimum of 4x4 tefachim, and we threw it on top of the yased. So Mahu, the Gemara wants to know, my kami baile. Hanachas chefes vasiyas mechitza bahadei adadikasi. So the Gemara says, now, are we looking at the following? Because over here, are we saying now that when it lands on top of the peg, and again, the assumption is that I threw it from a Rishus HaRabim to now the top of the peg. So what basically I've done is that I have landed an item and created Rishus HaYachid, and we've done so simultaneously. The Gemara says, if that's true, if that's what we're asking, but the Gemara says, but you're not breaking any new ground over here. Hainu de Rabbi Yochanan. And this is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan was asking. So all you're doing is just giving me another version, another scenario, but it really comes back to the question of Rabbi Yochanan. In that, we're looking at two events that occurred simultaneously, and the question is, halachically, do we look at them as if they occurred simultaneously, or do we look at them sequentially? So kikami baile the rava could go into zarg daf the chefetz agabav. So the Gemara says that over here in introducing a novel aspect to this question, so perhaps the question over here goes as follows. It's not that you just simply threw some sort of platform onto the peg, but basically what you did is you threw a platform and there was an item on top of the platform as well. So now, for a good visualization over here, so we have a peg stuck in the ground. The peg in itself is 10 tefachim high, but it's not dalad al dalad. I threw a plank that is dalad by dalad on top of the peg, okay? And somehow it landed squarely right on top of the peg. And now we have created a Rishus HaYachid. In just a moment, we're going to explain a little bit better how exactly it is a Rishus HaYachid. It does not have four walls going down, but in a moment, we're going to try to explain that. In the meantime, however, now you have created Rishus HaYachid because it's an area of dal by dalid, and on top of that, it is also 10 tefachim high. Now, if the question is, by throwing the plank on top of it, have I transferred from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim? So as the Gemara already taught us, that's not breaking any new ground because that's exactly what Rav Yochanan's question was, just asked a little bit differently. What the Gemara now is introducing is the following. Let's say that on top of the plank, there was another item, whatever that item may be. And now that item is landing on the top of the plank, which is in of itself now a Rishus HaYachid. So my. Now the Gemara over here explains why this question has a new element, a new wrinkle to it. On one hand, we could just simply say everything is occurring at the same time. Everything is occurring at the same time, and we do not have a sequence over here. And so the item did not land on a Rishus HaYachid after it was formed and fashioned as a Rishus HaYachid, but everything occurred at the same time. And you do not have liability. Odilma, or perhaps the other way to look at it, is Kevin de lo Efshar, de lo Midle Porta, On the other hand, the Gemara says, let's consider, as we're viewing now this plank with the item on it, being thrown on top of the thrown on top of the peg, so what's going to happen is that the plank is going to land on top of the peg. And the item that's on top of the plank is also going to be landing on top of it as well, but what probably is going to happen, says the Gemara, is that there's going to be a bounce. The item that's on top of the plank is going to bounce a little bit up, and then what's going to happen is that it's going to come back down again. And perhaps in that moment, if we can go slow-mo over here on what's happening, perhaps in that bounce that it takes going up and it comes back down again, so perhaps the way we can view it is that that is now going to be considered another step in the hanacha. So now as the plank is settled on the top of this peg, and then the item on top of the plank makes a bounce up and comes back down again, so that is going to be the hanacha after it was already set up as a rishus yachid. And the Gemara now is entertaining the idea that for that little bounce, maybe for that there should be a liability. The Gemara leaves this question taken. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved. But at least we understand now how it is that you have another dimension to this question that wasn't explored previously by Rabbi Yochanan. You can see the bottom Tosfos over here. The Tosfos over here has a little bit of an issue in terms of how this is viewed as a Rishus Yachid, because really what you have is that you have the plank itself is being dalad by dalad, but where are the walls over here? Where are the halachic walls over here? See Tosfos for a discussion of that, because it doesn't really fit into the general rules in terms of what creates a halachic wall. Bottom Tosfos discusses it, but I'll leave you to looking at that Tosfos on your own. In the meantime, let's quickly recap the daf. In the beginning of the daf, in Tzadi Tzetzem and Aleph, the Gemara just followed up with a couple more points regarding the two coverings, the coverings that went below, the Mishkan covering, the covering that went above, that's the Oel covering, differences between them in terms of their actual makeup, difference with them in terms of the amount of skill and intelligence that's necessary for the women who construct them. The Gemara revisited the idea of Rav, that if you're walking underneath the wagons, between the wagons, or between the wheels of the wagons, so you are in a Rishus HaRabim proper. The Gemara went over the dimensions. The Gemara asked the question of why specifically these dimensions. The Gemara gave answers. And the Gemara goes over the basic idea that a Rishus HaRabim has to be 16 amas wide, assuming that this is going to be the source for this halacha, that a Rishus HaRabim has to be 16 amas wide. The Gemara was bothered by the fact that it seems that the wagons going from the exterior of one wagon to the exterior of the other wagon is only 15 amas wide, not 16 amas wide. The Gemara asks a question, the Gemara gives an answer. On the bottom of Sadi Tetzam and Aleph, we continue with the next Mishnah. We talked about where you dug a hole in the ground and you put the dirt alongside the hole and also that of a stone, as long as both of them have the dimensions of being an area 4x4 and being 10 tefachim deep, so that area now is a Rishus Yachid. Transferring from the Rishus HaRabim to that area is in fact going to be the malacha of Hachnasa. Traveling from the stone or the chulia to Rishus HaRabim would be Hotza'a. What are we learning in the Mishnah in the case of chulia? So we learned about Hitzarfus, that I could take a pit that is 5 tochen deep and with the ridge around it that is 5 tochen high, and take the two in measurements and combine the two in order to get to a total of 10. On the Amud Beis today, the Gemara asked a number of questions. The Gemara first started off with the question of what happens if I take an item, throw it from a Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid, but it goes through a Makom Pater. The Gemara quoted numerous Amarim that said that it is no different than our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is exactly that case. The Gemara tries to give an argument in terms of why our Mishnah is not necessarily prove that very question. The next question the Gemara dealt with today is, what happens when I have a wall, that the wall itself is not a Rishus HaYachid, meaning the base area of the top of the wall is not 4x4, but the wall is used to create a perimeter of a Rishus HaYachid. Does the wall itself obtain the status of a Rishus HaYachid? The Gemara's answer is a definitive yes. That is a Kav HaChomer. Since the wall is creating a Rishus HaYachid, the wall itself is also considered part and parcel of the Rishus HaYachid. Placing an item on the wall is considered like you're placing an item on the Rishus HaYachid. The next questions that the Gemara dealt with are the questions of Rav Yochanan. When I have a pit that's 9 tefachim deep, and I dug the extra tefach and took that clod of earth out, how am I looking at that? Am I saying that the removal of the earth and the establishment of a of Rishus are occurring concurrently, are they occurring sequentially? The Gemara asks a similar question in the opposite case, where the pit was 10 tefachim deep and I threw in a tefach worth of earth into the bottom of the pit. Again, same question. It might be a little bit different than the previous question, but it's the same idea. Do the events of it losing its status of Rosh Hashanah and the Hanukkah, are they occurring concurrently? Are they occurring sequentially? And the Gemara asks a question on the bottom of the Amud, which seems to be sound extraordinarily similar, in that I threw a plank on top of a peg, creating the Rosh Hashanah, and then there was an item on top of the plank, which bounced. Maybe perhaps that adds an element to it. The Gemara leaves a lot of these questions unresolved. Okay, we'll stop over here.